Welcome to Declarations of War Podcast, episode 71. Your host for this evening, Alexeyev Card, CSM representative Alia Ross.
Hey, guys.
And the one and only Ninja Turtle.
What's up, everybody?
First of all, I want to give a shout-out to Jane Fillion and his Sanctuary of Shadows. You may know them as the leaders of Spectre Fleet. I'm looking forward to working with them in the coming week.
And I'd like to give a shout-out to the Wormhole Alliance No Holes Barred. They had me on to talk about my CSM campaign and hang out on TeamSpeak, and I sang Don't Stop Believing for them.
I want to give a big shout-out to BearSimulator.com. It's a Kickstarter for what's really going to be an amazing simulation game. If you've ever wondered what it'd be like to be a bear with near-human levels of cognition. Also, Bronya Boga for setting up the Milwaukee meet, and everybody that actually came out to that meet. It was a blast. It more than doubled in size. So thanks for coming out, guys.
And, of course, our sponsor, Eve Timecode. Buy 14 Eve Timecodes. Get one free. EveTimecode.com, where your business counts. Poll results. We were wondering, how closely does everybody follow the New Eden Open? We had pretty good response, and it turns out a lot more people did than I thought. 49% said a little bit, and it's kind of cool. And then an entire 24% said they're all about it. And really, only a quarter of our audience don't seem to be too into it, so I am pumped. That's a good sign to me, because I'm really into competitive gaming and esports. I think Eve, while not being, you know, necessarily the most thrilling thing to watch, sometimes has a lot of possibility there, and I think this New Eden Open was the best, one of the best tournaments. I think even counting the last Alliance tournament, I think I liked it better. I don't know about you guys.
I mean, I liked it. I think the meta was a little bit more interesting in this New Eden Open than the Alliance tournament, partly because we didn't have, you know, all Dominics all the time. Or all drone comp all the time. The change to allow two logistics frigates instead of a single logi was a really good change in my opinion, and it diversified the setups a lot and introduced some new tactics.
Yeah, that really opened things up more than I always thought it would, but I was surprised at how popular they became, especially toward the later half of the tournament. I saw a lot of teams electing to go with the logistic frigates, which is awesome. I love the Logi Frigate. I love it as a concept. I wish we would see more use in the actual server. And rolling on to Eve news. Well, that was a thing for a little bit. Nexus Fleet went from Nulli Secunda's Coalition, the N3, to joining HeroCo to much fanfare, to now disbanding and merging back into Nulli Secunda proper.
We're now up to N2.5. Of course, Nexus Fleet being the rather less heard of N of the N3 coalition.
Yeah, I didn't even know it was till a couple months ago. You didn't really hear much about them as a unit.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't
And
know.
Now we never will.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't know what Hero is up to following that move.
Last time I talked to them, they were still sort of aiming at catch, but it doesn't seem like they're in any hurry to get going. I think they're having a lot of trouble integrating themselves, getting, like, coalition-level infrastructure set up so they can coordinate.
Mm-hmm. I know Brave Newbies, you know, built a whole new federated forums thing and got that all set up before the coalition went out, but, So I don't know how much it's that kind of infrastructure versus versus the logistics stuff, because it certainly seems like the logistics stuff has been more stressed, especially with an Incendia.
I do believe there was an engagement they had with Test where Test and Brave just weren't on the same page because they weren't on the same comms. So that kind of stuff probably puts a little bit of the fear of God into them about making sure everything is integrated, and maybe it's logistics. I don't know. They've been sort of in a holding pattern for a while, though. I can't imagine how much more stuff they're moving into place. I would suspect it's more of a technical side of things, or maybe that they can't agree on how to solve those integration issues.
Mm-hmm.
If you are a member of HeroCo and you want to offer some insight into this ongoing story, feel free to mail into the show. Other than that, it's been a fairly slow week in EVE. We've had some Titans die, but that's not really news, at least not anymore. So, let's go into the thing that's grabbing all the headlines, and I may get the record for largest Threadnought. It's getting up there.
Although, I definitely saw an EVE search stats thing that said, 15 posters were responsible for 40% of the thread.
I would believe that, having read maybe 1/15th to 1/20th of the thread. It does seem to be the same people over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, it definitely became, the battleground for a specific set of people, with post counts of that thread in, the hundreds.
And I hope CCP takes note of that when they look at the whole thing. Because it's a very small minority creating a lot of noise.
Yeah, I mean, I know CCP is ways of looking into that stuff, so.
Well, I know they can, I'm just hoping they do, that's all.
For sure. It's an interesting thing. I'm kind of in the, area of, in between two positions, in that I'm really not a fan of what Erotica is doing, and I think that he's a detriment to the community. And possibly...
Well, speaking of what he's doing, for people that are listening to the podcast that may not be caught up in the situation, let's go over, the basics of the actual event / Erotica's scheme, and then I guess we can go around and sort of put our chips on the table about where we all stand on this. So Erotica is a famed Jita scammer. He's one of those ISK doubler type people. He's got a really elaborate set of rules in his bio, which you must follow exactly or you won't get the double your money. And in that way, he claims himself not to be a scammer. Of course, the rules are very convoluted. Some of them are in the smallest possible font, all the way at the bottom line, in hard-to-read script, etc., etc. But technically, from his point of view, he's not scamming. You just didn't follow the rules. And in that way, he operates much like the rest of them. Most people do not get their money back. Some people do. The ones that do, occasionally, he will invite them to what is called the bonus round, in a channel called the Glory Hole, aka the bonus room. And basically, and I can't for the... Well, I guess this is jumping ahead to my position. I can't for the life of me understand why anyone would agree to do this in the first place, but you contract over all of your assets, station by station. You give him all of your money. You give him an API to confirm all of your money and confirm that's all the money from all the characters in your account. He'll ask you for other accounts too, etc.
Cash out everything. Literally cash out everything with an ISK value. Faction LP, Concord LP. Yeah, all this shit. Everything.
anything you can possibly monetize in your character, except perhaps the character itself. Liquidate it. Give it over to him or the other representatives that he's working with. And the theory is that if you go through the bonus round and do this, that you will get, I think it's 5 times that value back.
Something like that. It's you demonstrate your faith, and by doing so, you will be rewarded. The whole thing has this creepy, quasi-religious aura to it that
for some reason does not turn people away. So, some people actually do this, and when they do, the next step is he makes them read things. He makes them read the code of the New Order, which is a minor bumping organization in HiSec, led by James 315. You have to read all of that. You have to read various excerpts from Wikipedia. In the case of the most recent publication of this event, it was Russian history of some Romanian revolutionary, or not Romanian, a Ukrainian revolutionary. I don't know what the hell was going on with that, but basically it's weird random stuff that's not really germane to anything. The idea is that he keeps you going for as long as possible, and when that's all done, you have to email James315 how excited you are about going through the bonus thing, about what you've learned from the code, what you've learned from the things that he's made you read, etc. It goes on and on and on and on. And then, if you go through all that stuff, then they make you sing various songs, like, in this case, the Gummy Bear song, and so on and so forth. And presumably, if you get through that after apparently 10 to 20 songs, I would presume there is more to it after that. The whole idea is that you keep going until you fail, basically.
Yeah, there have been clients who have photographed themselves in various states of undress. I guess no, like, full-on nude photos per se, but some guy wrote Erotica 1 for CSM on his chest in peanut butter. Reportedly, they attempted to get someone else to slather mayo all over himself, and someone else submitted a picture of his girlfriend's butt with the word with the words Erotica 1 for CSM on them. It's
pretty awesome.
You can hear Allie's faith in humanity slowly dying as we go through this story.
And my faith in humanity is pretty rock bottom.
So, in this particular case, the one that got the most attention was because it was a SoundCloud, it was posted up, and Ripard Teg got a hold of it and wrote a very long expose type post on his blog, Ripard Teg, the CSM dude, and noted author of Jester's Trek, and he basically akined the entire process to torture and recommended the presumably permabanning, possibly criminal action against Erotica 1. And then it spawned a gigantic thread knot, currently looking at 343 pages. Now, it is worth noting that toward the end of this 2-hour-long recording, the victim eventually comes to terms with the fact that he's been scammed, or at least he does briefly. Goes into a fit of rage. There's cursing, there's death threats, there's racist comments, an extended racial diatribe, I would call it, Mel Gibson-y. There's homophobic comments, there's death threats against family members. The guy's wife is brought on and threatens to do something to their accounts or something to them personally. It's not entirely clear.
We don't know what she can do. She's apparently got some fucking powers, though, I'll tell you that, according to her.
And then she allegedly, off mic, has a panic attack, and then he sort of calms down and then tries to get them to give him his money back if he only sings 2 more songs. And it's just like, what the fuck, dude? Just walk away. But anyway, that goes, and when it's clear that that's not happening, he proceeds to have a bit more rage. And throughout this entire thing, Erotica 1 and his cohorts maintain an absolute even keel, and they keep trying to encourage this guy to participate in the bonus round festivities, and they constantly dangle that he might get his money back if only he would sing one more song, if only he would go through this next step. And that's basically where it's left.
I will admit they did keep an extremely professional candor for that 2 hours 15 minutes.
Yeah, so I cut off Allie to go through the facts of the case, so we'll start with Allie here. Allie, what was your take on the situation? And take as much time as you like, and then we'll turn it over.
Two things. One, I disagree with a lot of the hyperbole that is being used to discuss this case, this, you know, player who's doing things. I disagree with a number of people point at Erotica One and at the bonus room or whatever as like, this is a bad thing, and this is a bad thing that is like all the other bad things that Eve players do. Eve players are bad people. I disagree with that. I do find Erotica One and the Erotica One bonus round thing to be over the line. This is a guy who is so creepy that the goons kicked him out. He's engaged in repeated, protracted harassment that is, intended to extend as long as he can make it go, basically, and he tries to extend it with various gross manipulation techniques. I mean, he's taking people's stuff, which I, as an Eve player, have no problem with, and then he's holding it over their head in an attempt to get them to humiliate themselves over and over and over and on and on and on, and a lot of these people end up sort of breaking in some kind of way, and it frankly feels abusive and malicious. And this is the kind of thing that there are people who do this stuff. There are people who are that much of a douche and, you know, get their kicks off of, and this is the thing that makes it go across the line for me. It's getting the kicks off of not just, you know, beating someone in a game, but using that game thing to have them humiliate themselves in real life. And he's using the Eve sandbox thing for social cover. It's, you know, he's dancing as close as he can to the sort of sandbox line and doing stuff that is like a lot of the stuff that, you know, people do normally in the sandbox, and that I and the Eve community has no problem with in the sandbox. You know, talking about singing, I got on NoHo comms and sang a song for them. If someone were to capture my ship in LoSec or Wormhole Space or NullSec or whatever and ask me to come onto their comms and sing them a song, I would do that with pleasure. Even if it was, you know, one of the songs that I know that I have a hard time hitting the notes on or something like that.
You don't find that to be, in some ways, even worse than what Erotica One's doing.
To me,
the breakdown, when people, I've heard a couple of people use that example, and it's a great example to bring up because I think it illustrates a lot of the issues here. If you tackle somebody in Wormhole Space, whether it's NoHo tackling you or Redcoat Conspiracy tackling CCP Gargant and refusing to release him unless he comes on comms and sings while they record it and post it publicly, it's doing a lot of the same stuff that Erotica One is doing, with two distinctions. One, the recipient has maybe a reason to believe they'll let you go.
Mm-hmm.
And two, in your case and in CCP Gargant's case, you enjoyed it.
Right. And
whereas,
I think three,
it's easily possible that you didn't enjoy it, and there are some players that don't enjoy that and do feel humiliated by that.
Mm-hmm.
And so is the line that we're going to ask CCP to draw whether or not the receiving player has fun?
No. I mean, it's, it is by its nature sort of a fuzzy line kind of thing. I mean, you know, even if you run into this problem at a much smaller scale, if you look at, you know, it's clearly against the terms of service to abuse or harass another player in the game. If someone, you know, if I'm cloaky camping someone and they tell me to get fucked in local, is that abuse or harassment? If they, you know...
Is the camping itself abuse or harassment?
Right, so
this is
exactly.
An actual in-game action.
Yes.
Like holding someone in place and not letting them go unless
sure.
they do something out of game for you.
Sure. You know, and those are both in-game things that have... CCP doesn't consider abuse or harassment. Players don't consider abuse or harassment unless occasionally they're on the receiving end of that, and then most everyone else tells them to, this is Eve, harden the fuck up. I think the difference between singing for your ship, even if it's, or being asked to sing for your ship, even if it's something that, you know, you may not enjoy or find humiliating, and what Erotica One is doing is that, it seems like what Erotica One is doing is always taking it to the point where you're not enjoying it. It's, you know, I might enjoy coming on to sing for my ship, but upon, you know, receiving my song and posting it up on SoundCloud, you can hear me kind of a little awkwardly singing Don't Stop Believing on, I have no idea what SoundCloud it's on.
Gloriously singing Don't Stop Believing. Come on.
All right, well, thank you. But it's on the internet for everyone to hear. You know, when I sing my song, that will be over. And they will either pop my ship or they will, you know, let me go. My ship is not my entire assets. There isn't this process of kind of building up psychological pressure. There isn't, you know... the process of continuing to push at me to see how far I will go. And it's those are major differences. It's not, you know, there's a difference between someone crossing a line once and someone making their primary gameplay thing line crossing. And it's always going to be something that's a little bit fuzzy, and it's always going to be something that absolutely includes, you know, the victim did not have fun. That, you know, includes abuse, harassment, humiliation, whatever. But beyond that just goes into, you know, how severe is it? How repetitive is it? All that kinds of stuff. There is no, like, here is the rules and you must stay within these rules that, other than the terms of service term about, other than the terms of service clause about abuse and harassment that CCP already has, there's no rule that I think that I, this is where I disagree with Rupert Tegg quite strongly, there's no rule that I think that CCP should be implementing to stop this, because they have a rule to stop it, and if they plan to enforce against Erotica One, that's the one they should enforce on.
Turtle?
I don't know. I think this is a pretty stupid conversation, to be honest. Like, the only reason that this has ever seen the light of day anywhere, outside of, like, a circle of probably, like, 100 people, is the fact that Ripper brought it up in his blog, right? So it brought it, like, to a major audience. This is, like, the most outlier of cases that you could imagine, like... And yeah, I guess I feel bad for the guy, but in a lot of ways, I really don't feel all that bad for him, because, I mean, it is Eve. And yeah, it sucks that, like, they pushed him so far, and it's also kind of stupid that you stayed around that long, like, or maybe even in the first place thought that if you literally liquidated every inch of your account and gave it to these people, that they were gonna, like, give you a return of 5 times the value. Like, that's just... Really? You know? I just... So, and in that regard, I really just don't... I don't feel bad. I think it's a stupid question.
too. Or I think it's just it's kind of a stupid conversation because it's the most extreme of outliers, and for every one of those dudes, there's 10,000 guys in Jita Local that, you know, get scammed on 50 million. There's probably, you know, another 100 guys that get invited to the bonus room. 99 of those guys will leave. And every one time that person goes in there, I'm like, yeah, I get it that you have the potential for this kind of like physically harm inflicting or physical harm inflicting kind of thing. But like, you know, it's a fucking video game. Just get up from your computer.
Well, it's not. First of all, what physical harm? There's no.
Well, okay, emotional harm, whatever. Okay. You know what I mean. Out of game. Not like I just blew up your assets. Like, I mean, if his wife legit did have a panic attack, like that technically could, you know, bring about physical harm. You know, that's the train of thought, right? And it's like, dude, it's not. It's God. You're not in fucking Guantanamo. Like, there's no waterboarding going on. Like, you're not strapped to the chair. Like, just get up and leave. Like, yeah, you got yourself in a stupid situation. Take the time and learn from the opportunity and realize that this kind of is what Eve is. And if you allow people to get this far with you, because at the root of it, there's a fundamental choice for that dude to sit there that long and like do all this shit when, I mean, any inch of common sense would have been like, yeah, this is a scam. This is not for real. Or any like simple Google search on the topic would have been like, yeah, this dude is going to fuck with you all day long. Like literally a 3-year-old.
He does start look him up. But that's at like an hour 45.
Yeah, exactly. 2 hours into it. And it's like, dude, if you had looked up an inch of this dude before you even started talking to him, none of this would have happened. And so, like, buyer beware, man. Buyer beware. And, like, this is what the game is. And if you let people go this far, this is what's going to happen. So I totally agree with Ali. Like, CCP really shouldn't do any rule changing on this. Like, if you want to go after the dude's account because, I mean, I guess I could see that, because he did, if you twist it in the right frame of reference, I mean, he did kind of break the EULA in some ways. So, I mean, I could see if they went after his account, but, I mean, they shouldn't be adding any additional rules to this, in my opinion. But yeah, I don't do zero fucks given for it, really.
Yeah, so, I knew of Erotica 1 as a scammer in general. I didn't know any specifics. I certainly was not aware of the public humiliation aspect of it until Ripard Tag published this guy's public humiliation far more than Erotica 1 could ever hope to do.
Yeah, exactly. It came up on the Eve forums back in November, briefly. That was when Goonswarm kicked him out.
Yeah, I didn't even know he was in Goon. Like, he was fairly under my radar. Probably fairly under most players' radar, I would venture to guess. But of course, now we all know him, and we all know his victim, and we all know what his victim did. We also now know that the victim in question, the person that Ripard Tag decided to highlight as the, you know, oh, this is too far, happens to be a virulent racist, a virulent homophobe, and sitting at the unfortunate intersection of greed and stupidity.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no sympathy for him whatsoever, as a matter of fact. Other people I might, but I'm not familiar with those victims, so I couldn't say. In this case, I definitely don't think CCP needs to redo any rules, because I can't, and I haven't found anyone else that can, articulate where that line that everyone talks about crossing is, other than the fact that the other guy got upset. Guess what? You can do a lot of things in this game that get other people upset.
And if you could say that one of them crossed the line, like, both of them crossed the line, because I'll admit, it even surprised me when he started spitting out, like, racial slurs and stuff. I was like, oh, whoa, whoa, whoa. And it was really surprising. And so, like, I mean, you both crossed the line, like, what's that, mea culpa?
I don't even know. Honestly, I couldn't even point to the line that Erotica 1 crossed. Honestly, he's definitely a cold-hearted individual. Some sociopathic tendencies, but I imagine that applies to most of the scammers, because it would have to. Once you separate the scam from everything else, like, okay, the scam part. CCP has said that scamming in the game is perfectly fine. This guy got scammed really hard. And then after that, I mean, You can even tell him at some points he makes reference to the fact that he got scammed. He knows that money is gone. What keeps him in is he's not willing to admit that somebody got over on him. So he mm-hmm. keeps going through this thing. Okay, it's like, well, did you really need to drag it on for 2 hours? But exactly. I mean, other than that,
nobody had you strapped to a chair.
That's the yeah. I mean, I know no one had them strapped to a chair. Whatever. But the way the bonus room is set up is designed to try and keep you there, like, as long as possible, so that, you know, they can keep getting more stuff out of you until...
Well, so are casinos and supermarkets.
Yeah, that's why casinos don't have windows.
I mean, no, I know. And it's, you know, one can argue about morality of casino design or whatever. But
or the fact that they serve liquor, don't have clocks.
Sure.
It's designed to keep you there as long as you're willing to be there.
Right, but the thing, the line that I feel like Erotica One has crossed is the line in which he's using people's in-game assets as leverage to get them to humiliate themselves in real life. And it's true that, you know, technically they can stand up and walk away and all of that. But he's doing this to hurt people, and he's doing this until it hurts people. You know, I won't cast any, and whether those people are good people or whether those people are, you know, going off on a homophobic, racist rant tirade, and. No, I don't think that reflects very, very well on this guy, and I don't particularly care for this victim. He's doing stuff to hurt people that hurts people at a game, and does not appear to give a shit. And that's the thing that's.
But we all do that, though.
Right, but we don't.
Like literally, well, maybe not literally every player, but certainly anybody that PvPs. Or participates
right.
in any part of the destruction side of this game, or the guys that undercut in Jita and make it so that people can't sell their stuff.
But the thing is, like, that, in that case, someone else's feelings getting hurt or whatever is maybe a side effect. You know, when I lose a stabber, I don't care. When I lost my jump freighter, yeah, I cared a lot. You can kind of hear it, on the stream, but the people who blew up my jump freighter don't blow up ships like just to hurt people in real life. Like that's
but
not
maybe some of them do
what they're
though.
Doing. Well,
like you can't expect CCP as a company to start getting into players' motivations. Look at Goonswarm. Half the shit they do is to cause human misery and frustration. Not all of it. Certainly some of it, and certainly some of it more than other parts of it.
The fun
Most
stuff.
Of it's the in-game frustration, it's interacting with other people, it's all of that stuff stays inside the game world.
Does it though? Now that we've got YouTube, Twitch, SoundCloud, how many Makalu SoundClouds got reposted? What about the song Makalu Cries, which was a huge embarrassment to that player?
Sure. But
basically
it wasn't...
collected a clip of his least flattering moments FCing fleets and dedicated a 4-minute long musical humiliation to him.
Sure. And I mean,
should Sindelpelion be banned?
No, I don't think so. And it part of that is that that's... It's one song, it's one instance, it's not going, you know, it's not like Sindelpelion set out to push Makalu as far as he could go. She wrote a very unflattering song. People write very unflattering songs and posts about people. You know, I certainly don't think that anyone who posts on my CSM thread with a... You know, I certainly don't think that I saw a very angry Reddit post about me a couple weeks back. I don't think that that player who posted that was, you know, engaged in harassment or should be viewed to be engaged in harassment, even if I looked at that and I went, dang, that's one, a pack of lies, and two, ow.
The funniest part about how dumb this conversation is like, at some point in the recording, he's like, something, 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 you know, fuck off. And just give me my billion-esque, which if you reverse engineer the math, if it's a five times winning, I mean, he has a whole total of 200 mil-esque wrapped up in the quote-unquote bonus round, which to new players might be a lot.
I will give him the benefit of the doubt and say that the billion is what he gave them.
Okay, that could be possible, which, I mean, it's a little further from my point, but still kind of holds true, which is, to a new player, that would be a lot of money, I suppose, but sitting on this side of the fence, it's really not a lot in the big scheme of things.
Yeah, well. But yeah, I mean, I guess you could say that this conversation in the podcast has been, in a lot of ways, a microcosm of the conversation in the community, just we've left some of the more hyperbolic erotica should be banned, and the culture of Eve is completely fucked parts.
It's Microbe's dirty jobs. It's dirty jobs. It's, we're making a show of the outliers that exist in the universe around us, and that probably happen every day, but until somebody gets down in the sewer with a video camera, we don't know that it exists. And so, like, now that it's been presented in front of us, we're all super disgusted about it, like... But I guarantee you that in a week, 2 weeks, nobody's going to be talking about this. Like, this is going to have faded completely into the ether.
I mean, from my perspective, I have more problem with the scamming part of it. Like, NAR is a no-scam zone, because we sort of have to be that way from our business perspective. I accept that scamming is part of the game. It's not part of the game that I participate in, and my corp can't participate in because of our business model of how we make money in the game. The... get the guy on comms and keep stringing him along thing. I can't speak to the other instances of Erotica One doing this with people, making them take pictures of themselves in various states of undress, that kind of stuff. I haven't looked into that. I have no idea what the circumstances are for that. But if you look what they actually asked the guy to do, he had to read a web page. It wasn't like a forced confession or anything. He was just reading I shall not mine, I shall gank, when I gank I shall always kill the guy, that kind of stuff. He had to read a historical article out of Wikipedia. He had to sing, which I guess could be embarrassing if you're normally not down with singing, but when I say sing and practice, this guy really just read the lyrics and they sort of let him go with that. The embarrassing thing of the entire bit is really this guy's poor judgment in keeping that situation going when he knew or should have known that he wasn't going to get the money. Nothing they actually asked him to do is really that strange or bad. They didn't ask him to hurt himself. He didn't have to do anything with permanent consequences, really, in real life. They basically just wasted his time and kept stringing him along.
Literally, that's all. Just wasted his time in the most egregious manner possible.
Right. It's like making someone read the dictionary for a prize money.
Right. I mean, in this case, the person in question, I believe, had a speech impediment?
He had a regional speech accent that's common to the Baltimore area and the Northeast.
Got it.
Which, yeah, I guess it's technically a speech impediment. Maybe I'm just not as sensitive to it because I know quite a few people that speak that way. It's just sort of a, like, a local color kind of thing. I never really thought of it as like a impediment. And even if it was, the guy clearly didn't have any problem talking. And when he got mad, he seemed to speak quite fine.
He was not a child. Well.
He was not mentally disabled. He's not physically disabled. He was not mentally impaired. He didn't have a specific phobia that they knew about and were going in to prey upon. He was, for all intents and purposes, aside from, like I said, his virulent bigotry and stupidity, which is only discovered really after the fact, I guess. He is, for all intents and purposes, the legal definition of a consenting adult. They didn't drug him. They didn't blackmail him. They didn't...
Oh, I mean, they kind of... They were blackmailing him with his Eve assets.
But that's,
but
like...
But he had no expectation of getting them back, or shouldn't have. It's, okay, this person scammed me. I'm clearly going to believe the next words coming out of their mouth.
Well, yeah,
I mean, reasonable.
Sure, someone's blackmailing, and I should clearly believe that if I just pay them off, they will stop blackmailing me. People fall for that in the real world all the damn time. Well, he's paying them with his time, his energy, his song, or whatever the hell. You know, he's quote-unquote paying them in his compliance to whatever it is that they're asking him.
But he also willingly, at this one point, before it all started, gave them all his stuff. Like,
yeah, like you say, they're holding his stuff. It's not his stuff anymore.
Yeah, he willingly gave it at some point. I can see what you're saying. I mean, they're threatening him.
They lied to him, certainly. And they
exactly. Oh, yeah.
They threaten him with
the
potential of not getting it back, which is the motivator.
Yeah, it's loss aversion. People are significantly more motivated to avoid losing something than they are to try to gain something.
Sure.
But yeah, they were blackmailing him with his own stuff. You know, whether he gave it to them, whether that was, you know, a smart decision or not, that is what they were doing.
But I still find that less egregious than the ship thing, tackling someone's ship. That is a thing that you still have possession of. Do this or we're going to blow you up. That's like threatening at gunpoint in the game, quite literally.
Sure, but blowing up, losing your ship is significantly less painful, and it's not your entire assets, it's one small fraction of your assets. Well,
it certainly is for some people, and you hear about that all the time. Care Bears that put everything they have into a new mission ship or a new mining ship, and it gets suicide ganked, and they rage out. This was everything I had in the game. I have no idea what I'm gonna do. I'm just gonna quit. Why did you do this?
Sure,
you're evil,
but
blah,
we don't. The expectation. I don't seek. When I seek someone out to suicide gank them, I don't, you know, expect that it's their only ship. I don't, you know, verify. I don't go to all this effort to verify that I have in fact located all of their worldly assets and am in fact about to, you know, holding all of their worldly assets at gunpoint. I just have this one ship that's in front of me. It's a much more brief, self-contained, you know, one-on-one thing. If someone was holding a mission runner ship that they had ascertained was like their only ship at gunpoint for hours and forcing them to go through increasingly demanding them to go through increasingly high hoops, it would approach the same kind of thing. But otherwise it's a much more sort of localized interaction.
So I will say this. For contracts, Noir has been hired to what was described to us, blow up Posses that had, quote, literally all of their possessions in Eve. Whether that's true or not, whatever. But certainly, we've engaged in actions that have caused players to quit. Certainly, we have engaged in actions that caused massive frustration and rage on our victims. Certainly, we have destroyed entire alliances through financial loss, through morale loss. We have, even above and beyond the requirements of our contract, in one occasion that I'm thinking of, sought out basically the nest egg of one particular corporation because they were taking advantage of an exploit to prevent us from finishing our contract, and we did not appreciate that. So we tracked them down to their wormhole, where they had drug manufacturing pauses on all the moons, and we had reliable intel that it was, if not everything they owned, certainly everything they owned corporately, and considerable value of what they had privately. And we destroyed all of it.
Sure, and none of that involved that. All of
that was over the course of days, not 2 hours.
Yeah, and all of that was entirely people's in-game assets in the game. You know, nothing else. There was no real-life humiliation involved. There was no...
Except for the fact that I have a podcast and I told their story and gave their names and did the blow-by-blow of the battles and the kill mails and here's how much value it was.
Right, and I mean, at some point, and we know where the line right there is, in terms of how much, you know, after action report on someone's rage, and how specific you are allowed to by the community be with your sharing of someone else. We know that because Mitani got banned for 3 months.
He got banned for encouraging people to contact someone and can encourage that person to commit suicide. This is a far cry from that example.
Sure, I mean, that's kind of what I'm getting at.
Both my case and Erotica 1's case are far from that example. Erotica at no point encouraged this person to do self-harm, or encourages others to encourage this person to do self-harm. In fact, he often asks him to calm down. Of course, it's in hopes of him continuing on with this thing, just to see how long he can keep this guy on the phone, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But not even in a joking manner does he encourage him to hurt himself in any way. In fact, he's awfully nice, tone-wise and content-wise. Of course, motivationally, it's awful and cruel.
It's
but
like
that's
talking
not
to
against the EULA.
It's like talking to a satellite TV rep. Like, they're just so nice to you. They're going to, like, come over and do your laundry level nice, and yeah. It's pretty superficial, but I don't know. Feels good.
Even when the guy starts raging, then the other player is getting into some racist shit, and Erotica 1 and his guys are just, oh, please, calm down. I'm going to have you know this is a no swearing zone, so if you could please calm yourself. And it's, of course, that guy does no such thing, and I'm sure that was what the comment was intended to do. But, like, I don't know, I can't. The whole reason why it goes over the line is because it goes on for so long, and because the victim gets very upset. Well, the length thing, the whole point is, Erotic One will keep going until the other person decides to stop. That's the entire point of the game, really.
Right. And I think that's the thing that.
So why is it Erotica 1's fault that this guy went on for so long?
And I think the thing that a lot of people have trouble with is not having the humanity to be at a point where you can just say, like, yeah, I got your stuff. Sucks to be you. You know, boot him off of TeamSpeak, and that there should be a line at which you look at yourself and you look at Sion Kumitomo had an interview where he was talking about this, and he was saying that it's hard to point at an exact line, but it's when you feel that sort of hollow feeling in your stomach that you've probably either crossed it or you're watching someone cross it. And that there is no point at which Erotica will feel that feeling and, you know, I'm not saying, you know, and feel bad for the guy and give him all of his stuff back and give him a, you know, pat on the shoulder and a tissue, but just, you know, have the decency to kick him off of TeamSpeak and take his stuff and be happy.
Sure, and that's fine, but does CCP have to determine where that line is? Like, you can't keep lying to someone for 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours?
And that's
I'm not saying I think Erotica One is a good person. I don't think he's a good person.
Yeah.
And if it was anybody but the person he did it to, I would say, yeah, that's terrible to do to someone. But is it CCP's position to take some kind of enforcement action? I don't see how. I don't think so. And two, even if they were going to, I don't see how in the world you would be able to write such a policy.
Harassment and abuse section, the first item in the terms of service.
Right, but if that's harassment and abuse, then everything in the game is harassment and abuse, practically. Hell camps have to be a harassment and abuse. It's literally going for as long as the big alliance decides you can't do anything. Your entire alliance corp is shut down. If you try to leave the station, you're dead. And then meanwhile, they're humiliating you on Twitch, on news sites, etc., etc. Recording comments.
You don't have to stay in that. You don't have to stay in that station. I mean,
You don't have to stay in this guy's TeamSpeak.
It's still, when you're talking about hell camps or whatever, you're still talking about something which is taking place entirely within it's people playing the game. It's not, taking someone out of the game.
Playing the game. And if you separate taking his stuff from what goes on the TeamSpeak, then what's really left? In terms of the meat of this case. Like, if that's the distinction, the hell camp goes on in the game. I would question that, because it usually is accompanied by a gigantic PR offensive on websites, forums, etc. that has nothing to do with CCP servers. And then the other part of it is, okay, well, if you take his items out of it, then what's the Eve connection left?
You need his items and you need his stuff on the TeamSpeak. It's by like I've been saying, by their nature, harassment and abuse cases are going to be very individualized. I don't think a hell camp is what I think this is. Obviously we'll have to see what CCP does with it. And we'll have to see what happens.
Ooh, here's a good one. How about the Pod Xantrophina contest the Cap Stable is currently ongoing in? No, it's not intended meanly, and I think Xander probably has as much fun with it as they do. But putting a price, an out-of-game, using a third-party website to put an in-game price on somebody's head so that they are killed repeatedly.
I mean, as it's going, Xander's having fun, the people in question are having fun, and everyone's having fun, so no problems whatsoever.
Right, so, in other words, it becomes harassment and abuse when you stop having a good time with it, and the determining is when the victim stops having fun. Well,
yeah,
good thing we're not in a PvP game where people tend to stop having fun whenever they lose their ship, the war, their argument, whatever.
Yeah, it's not just what happens, it's what happens when the victim stops having fun, and then what happens, the several times after that. And that's...
But there was no several times after that. This is one instance. It's not like he kept holding it over this guy for weeks and weeks. This is one night on a TeamSpeak server.
It's one instance. It's a part of the pattern. We should probably move the podcast on, though, because we've been going around in circles for the past, 15 or so minutes. And,
I'm really enjoying it, actually.
It's a microcosm of the... it's a microcosm of the debate that is ongoing on Twitter.
Well, considering the... I don't know about Twitter, but considering the forum page is up to... 344 pages. I say we're doing our listeners a service by summarizing it.
Jesus Christ.
Yes, there is a pattern. But in terms of each individual player that interacts with Erotica 1, as far as I'm aware, and certainly in this instance, it is a one-time thing. It's not like he targets these people over and over and over again and tries to grief them out of the game. Now, entire other sets of players do literally that exact thing, and it could be argued they are doing worse than what Erotica One is doing, or had done in this particular case. But it's perfectly okay, socially and game-wise, to do that.
And we can look at those other cases or those other people, if we want to. I mean, like, my point has been and continues to be that each thing has to be considered individually. It's not, you can't make a, you know, this thing is clearly harassment and this thing is clearly not, except in the most, you know, overblown and clear-cut things, you know. I can start, you know, listing hilarious examples, but there is a gray area, and each case in that area needs to be discussed and evaluated on its own merits. I think it's where you stop doing that you do end up in the slippery slope thing that a lot of people are talking about and worried about.
I'm all for taking each case as it comes, but that in itself is pretty dicey, because at that point it gets extremely arbitrary, and what one person... And then you're going to get into questions of, well, this person gets singled out and treated a different way than this other player doing something similar.
There's literally no happy way for this to end for CCP.
Pretty like, much,
other
yeah.
Than, other than
or the
not,
community.
Just don't touch it.
Well, I don't see it as a unhappy ending. Just let it be.
Well, don't touch it is arguably unhappy from a PR perspective, given the way that this has blown up, and you know, if I don't, you know, if CCP thinks that this guy is bad for the community, then not touching it continues to leave that badness in place.
Yeah, but it also forces, like, I don't know, I was...
You get into really a question of what's worse for the community, this guy or banning this guy.
Well, it forces the community to make a choice that they're probably not going to make, which is, like, stand up and say that this level of shit isn't okay, which it's not going to happen. I mean, to be brutally honest. But
I don't see how, like, with the way they've designed this game, I don't see how they can come down at that and still... I mean, that would require a massive rewrite of Eve's fundamental non-consensual nature, really.
Because they said that this one case is harassment and abuse, it would require rewriting everything else that we already know about Eve. Like, I don't...
Well, it's precedent, isn't it?
It would set precedent for everything to come, basically.
It'd be a case of take action on this guy, the next time it comes up, if you don't take the same action... Or even it doesn't come up in quite such a way, but, you know, it comes up in some other similar circumstance, or a player has a similar reaction to something that someone is doing to them in the game, and they'll point to this and go, well, how come this player is treated differently than I'm being treated? And then that becomes its own story.
And I hope that if CCP bans this guy and when that, you know, eventually happens, that they and people tell them to suck it. I mean, like, CCP can tell people to suck it now, or they can tell people to suck it later. Either way, they're gonna have to, and that's part of where the calculus of is it better for the community to ban this guy, or is it better for the community to leave him unbanned? And on the one hand, you have the precedent and the future, you know, whining and rules lawyering and, well, if that was okay, how about this? And in the other case, you have an awful person dragging down certain parts of the game. So which would you rather, you know, which would you rather have? I don't think there's an easy answer to that, and I think that's something that CCP is got to answer for themselves.
I would rather have more education about the nature of Eve in the new player experience, so when players are brought in, they know what to expect and how to deal with the situation. That's what I'd like to say. And beyond that, I think the players themselves can take action. You know, if you think that this guy is a reprehensible human being, you could do like Goonstorm did. They kicked him out of their corp. You know, make him a pariah.
But you can't.
Do you do the equivalent of the Eve death penalty and permaban his character? I think that's a bit of an overreaction.
You can't make him a pariah from HiSec, though. You can't, like, kick him out of JITA. He doesn't undock. He's got his little cluster of followers. And it, you know, that group that he's amassed won't kick him out. You know, you could try to, you know, go up to each and every one and say, this guy that you've, you know, that you like or that you have some attachment to is bad news, but, you know,
that seems to be eager participants.
Right.
Which point, Erotica could just come back and be like, this dude's harassing me, he's ruining my gameplay experience, and, like, turn it all right around.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and going up to people and saying, your friend is actually a massive douchebag does not actually work in real life, and I don't think it would work at all in the game. So there's, aside from the extent to which the community already detests this guy, which is a fairly large extent given the forum thread, there's not too much more pariah that can be made, and for all the I'm the first person to stand up and say, you know, we should have more education in the new player experience, and we absolutely should. But there is no amount of education short of, you know, giving everyone an Eve, you know, perfect judgment that will stop this kind of thing from happening.
Well, the only way to fix it, to stop that thing from happening, is to give, like you said, players perfect judgment. Or take away the ability for players in Eve to do, quote, bad things.
It's...
There is no middle ground there.
There is... I mean, you can say there is a thing which is so bad that you're not allowed to do it. And you can say that what he is doing with bringing people onto comms, with the real-life pictures, with the SoundClouds and whatever... is with taking people and taking their assets and holding it over their head and breaking them is too far.
Well, see, okay, but now here's the thing, is you have to, within the recourse of a legal structure, usually, define out every inch of what you just described, every parameter, every dark little nook and cranny that could ever possibly become involved in this, you have to define now. And rule everything subsequently against this.
The reason why the GM decisions, why you can't paste the text of GM decisions on the forums is exactly so you don't have to do that. We have the terms of service, we have the EULA. If CCP finds him to have broken those, which I think that they arguably can, and ban him for breaking the existing terms of service in EULA, then They have just said that this is, you know, one bridge too far. It's not, you know, there's
but
no...
Again, which part
that's
of
a judgment
too far?
Which bridge, exactly? You still have to define a position. Like,
it's the whole... It's this one particular
stuff,
individual right? situation taken all together.
But that is, like, such a unicorn argument, though.
It is a unicorn argument. It's a unicorn situation.
So I better make sure that if I take somebody's stuff, I don't have them on my comms. Or if they're on my comms, I don't take their stuff. Because if you mix those two together, it'll make some kind of GMTNT, you know?
along with you know, protracted humiliation, and then do it a bunch of times, and you know, add in an extra sprinkler of other stuff. I mean, the big thing that I feel very strongly is that this should be considered a case of one person who is doing a bad thing, and not a case of let us try to exactly specify what is a bad thing. Because if you can exactly specify if you exactly specify it, someone will come out and they will do something horrible and something awful, and they will, you know, be an undeniable bad thing for the community, and but they won't have done exactly that, so then you have to just tighten the net farther, as opposed to saying we will deal with, you know, an exceptional situation and treat it and handle it when it comes up, and make a judgment call.
Well, I just have to say I think it's a bad judgment call then. Because I can't point to any specific thing that he's doing that is repeatable with another victim, say. Like, to me, the only thing that's really crazy about it is, again, how long it went. The fact that they kept this dude going for 2 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that. Since it's so exceptional, I have to believe that of all of Erotica's one's victims that he allegedly has, that this is the one guy that they were able to keep going that long with. And how are they going to know how long he's willing to go for?
Yeah, and that's... I've known about the bonus room in Erotica 1 and what he does for a long time, and this is not exceptional. It came up, like I say, last November, and I've been familiar with it because I've done some, you know, scamming and griefing stuff. And it's... The thing is, he's using the sandbox, and he's using that kind of nebulous gray area stuff as social cover to do something bad, and it's a pattern that people use in all kinds of situations, and CCP has the ability to make that kind of a judgment call, and I think they would be justified in doing so, but you know, there will be consequences and there will be fallout from that, and that's something that they should also be aware of and weigh when making the call.
Well, I think that's a good place to end it at. Alright, moving on. Contract wrap-up. Oh, this is such a bad thing to be doing after we talk about somebody possibly being permabanned for griefing, but... We were hired to grief Red vs. Blue in Goonswarm. And we did for 2 weeks. Uh-oh. Alec Permaban incoming. But, yeah. We were hired by Gevlin Goblin, who you might be familiar with, for the greedygoblin.blogspot blog, which is an extremely popular EVE blog, mostly focusing on high-sec issues. But Gevlin has a bit of a bug up his ass about Goonswarm. And to them, they epitomize the evil Nullsec cartel. They epitomize groups of organized players taking sadistic advantage and just torturing high-sec players. Which, you know, Goonswarm does things like burn Jita and stuff, so it's easy to see his perspective there, whether you agree with it or not. So from his perspective, high-sec is under siege by these Nullsec groups, of which he believes Goonswarm to be by far the worst and most morally reprehensible. So, unlike a lot of the general discussion, you know, high-sec forum posters, like, say, Dinsdale Piranha, he's actually putting his money where his mouth is and decided a couple months ago to go on a one-man campaign against everything Goonswarm. He has hired mercenaries. He has requested donations. He has posted propaganda pieces. He has hired more mercenaries. He's spread awareness. You name it. Anything that one player could do, he's doing it. The mercenaries he hired, Marmite Collective, were doing a pretty good job, but of course not enough for him, so he decided to open his own alliance called the Darwin's Lemmings. Darwin's Lemmings would be a place where anyone or any corporation of people that hated Goonswarm could join up into this public alliance that would just permadeck Goonswarm and other members of Goonswarm's coalition. And so that was cool. But he also wanted to move all of Goon's influence out of HiSec. And the main focus of his rage was the POCO system that Goonswarm has. Goonswarm, being the largest 00 group, was obviously in a good position to take some of the most valuable POCOs in the game when they were thrown open for player competition. And sure enough, they did, taking a lot of POCOs in the Gita area and Kaldari HiSec space generally. They made an ally out of Red vs. Blue, which is the HiSec PvP organization of much fame. So Goonswarm would help defend Red vs. Blue's POCOs, or more likely just not attack them. Red vs. Blue would do the same for Goon's POCOs and, you know, defend them in HiSec. That way Goons could focus on their 00 stuff. Goblin does not appreciate the fact that RVB turned their back on HiSec, and of course does not like anyone that is allies with Goonswarm. So he wants the POCOs gone, particularly the Goon POCOs, wants them out of HiSec. But his own alliances and the Marmite Collective just aren't getting the job done. In the course of, I think, 3-4 months, maybe even longer, they took one, maybe two POCOs out of the hundreds that they control. So they hired us. And the goal of the contract was to require Red vs. Blue to form up and defend a timer every day. So, for 2 weeks, we reinforced sometimes we did like two in one shot, but the idea was we were to reinforce a POCO once in the European, once in the US time zone. The idea being it would stagger these timers out and force them to keep forming fleets where they were just repairing structures instead of doing the HiSec for fun PvP that those groups were formed to do. And of course, if they didn't show up, we were supposed to take them if we could. Well, things went well. We stayed true to our contract. We reinforced two, sometimes even three or more, customs offices a day for 2 weeks. We destroyed 14 of them and successfully transferred them over to Gevlin Goblin's holding corp, which set them to 99% tax so that they would drive people from those planets even if Goonswarm were to later retake them. We also did some damage to Goons, their Renners, Red vs. Blue, and we had a couple fights with Red vs. Blue, some of which went our way, most of which unfortunately didn't, thanks to our academy. We took 14, which is pretty good, much higher than Goblin expected us to do. I think he estimated we would take about 5, best case scenario. So I think we surprised him there. And we would do things like we'd attack a POCO in one region and then a POCO in another region, and they would form up for the one and not the other, and we'd go kill the other one, that kind of stuff. We even destroyed a POCO right outside of Torinos, which is the main entry system to Goon's holdings. Or at least it used to be. It's been kind of dead lately, but still, it's like the entrance to Declan, pretty much. It's the pure bind HiSec entrance and the fastest way up to Goon's headquarters space. And we were right on the doorstep and took a POCO there, and I believe it still stands under Goblin's Holding Corp, which is kind of cool. He was very pleased with our turnout, with our performance, and with our results. Total was 131 kills, 19 losses, 7.89 bill damage done, nearly 2 billion received, efficiency 80.6. Now, First, I have to say, and most regular listeners will know, I don't really have any problem with Goonsworn. I actually really respect their leadership structure and their organizations, and I think they are what run probably the best managed coalition in the game. And I've met the Mitanni, I've met goons through my experience in the CSM. I met Darius Johnson at a meetup. You know, they're weird, but they're cool for the most part. I don't have the vehement hatred that Gevlin Goblin does, but we are mercs. We'll take the job. The price was right. I do, however, even if I don't agree with his position, I greatly respect Gevlin Goblin for, like I said, putting his money where his mouth is. Plenty of people on the forums and that write blogs take pot shots at Goonsworn, but not a one of them does anything about it in the game. He's a guy, he had money, he said, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to throw this cash down, I'm going to get these mercenaries together, I'm going to hire Marmite Collective, I'm going to hire Noir, I'm going to create an alliance, I'm going to try to get people excited about fighting Goonsworn, and I'm going to get those people into the alliance and point them in a direction. I'm going to fund their ships, all that kind of stuff. I'm going to fund their war decks. Nobody else is doing that. Dinsdale Piranha's not doing that. So, whatever you think of Goblin, if you like his blog, don't like his blog, you think he's nuts, you like Goonsworn, you don't like Goonsworn, I gotta give him a hat tip. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, with the money where his mouth is, I don't, you know, see where he's coming from. A lot of the time, I disagree with a lot of his writing, but at least he's doing things with it.
Allie, did you participate much in this contract? I don't think you had a lot of time this past 2 weeks.
No, I didn't have a lot of time. I did make it on for a couple of ops, but as per my usual when showing up on contract, nothing happened. I was on for a Poco kill. I successfully flew Logie, although nothing attacked us while I was doing so. And then was around for a couple of, you know, optimistic sniffs in the direction of capitals, but nothing that we actually killed.
Yeah, we had a couple good opportunities for stuff that just didn't pan out. We thought we were going to have a really cool fight with Red vs. Blue in their home system, where their participation wasn't too high. We took a fleet of Tempests in there, and they had some battleships on their undock. We had bait and everything. We thought we were going to get this great brawl, but we ended up just trading one battleship for one battleship, and they docked. It's a little disappointing. The other big disappointment was they totally brought a 100% engageable fleet to this one system that's maybe 6-7 jumps out of Jita. And earlier in the contract, like the first half of the contract this was going on, Goblin had instructed us to help train the Darwin's Lemmings and to work with Marmite Collective and Darwin's to try to, you know, bolster numbers, fight RB when we could, and get Lemming some organized fleet fight experience. And there was this perfectly engageable red versus blue fleet. Now, they outnumbered us like 5-1, but their comp was pretty bad. And I was feeling, it was risky, but I was feeling a little optimistic. I thought we could do it. And I'm talking to Marmite Collective, seeing what they're doing. And one of their FCs telling me, like, yeah, we're coming. Just give us a couple minutes. And I was like, yeah, all right. We'll wait. Because sure, why not? Have at least a distraction. Maybe even merge fleets with them and be able to take this fleet on head-to-head, even if they still outnumber us 3-1 or whatever. I'm waiting. Give them like 10 minutes. Hey, you guys coming or what? And they're like, no, we're not. And then at that point, like a couple minutes after they waved off, Red vs. Blue got done repping the Poco and they all left. We managed to kill like one ship on their way back. And that was it. I was just so frustrated. But yeah, so that's the RVB-BEE contract, aka the Goblin's Crusade. Goblin is extremely rich and extremely happy with us, so I imagine that his vendetta against Goonsworn is nowhere near over, and I imagine we'll not be hearing the last of him, so I'm sure he's going to throw us another contract at some point soon. That is, if Gunswarm does not provide us with a permanent retainer in the meantime. So always that possibility, wink wink, nudge nudge.
He lost his wormhole for it, so...
Yeah, so that worm... That was a pretty weak thing, by the way, that TMC put that out. I'm pretty sure they already ran that article, or damn close to that article, back when the event actually happened. But they just re-ran it again, I think.
I did not... Right. I did not... That would be me. I did not remember the previous one, and so Two-Step was like, hey, Corbex had this article writing it up from, you know, the NoHo perspective, and I was like, oh, I don't think we ran anything on that. Yeah, send it over.
Well, they didn't run the NoHo perspective, but I think they ran that it happened.
Got
either
it.
That or Goblin put it on his blog, but yeah.
Goblin definitely put it on his blog.
Basically, if listeners remember a couple casts back, we talked about working with Gevlin Goblin in a wormhole that we eventually kicked the owners out of so that Goblin could take over. Well, Goonswarm sent Red vs. Blue and NoHo into this wormhole to evict Gevlin Goblin. But it happened weeks ago, and then the Mitanni.com ran a post shortly after or just before the conclusion of our war. Because I guess they had lost so many Pokos, they felt like they needed to say something. And they sort of ran it, and obviously they didn't say that it just happened, but they sort of implied it was in response to his ongoing Poko thing. But really it happened like almost a month ago. It was well before they hired us to hit Goonswarm Pokos, and before Goonswarm even lost a single Poko. So that was a bit strange. Usually goons are a bit better PR-wise than that one. I mean, there's really nothing stopping them from doing something fresh to torture Goblin. So I don't know why they reused an old thing that they had done weeks ago. I guess he's not on their radar, so they weren't feeling particularly motivated and just did the lazy thing. It'll be an interesting story to watch, and it's certainly something we're going to continue to update, especially if we get hired again. So, speaking of This Week in Mercs, Marmite Collective is working with Lemmings, which had been Gevlin Goblin's alliance. He bankrolled them for all intents and purposes. It was his instrument. Basically a public alliance for anyone that hated Goonswarm could join. They were working with Marmite Collective, essentially doing Jita undocking. Well, now Gevlin Goblin, after being disappointed with their performance a little bit, essentially had it out with their leadership and is now taking his hands off of it and letting them do their own thing, and they're going to stick with Marmite. And it's essentially... For all intents and purposes, it's basically the training alliance for Marmite now. Because they're doing the same thing against the same targets, and I'm guessing maybe Marmite's is harder to get into? I don't even know. I guess I feel good for them. More numbers, more kills. But it's just weird. I don't know why a Goblin would go through all the trouble to create an alliance like that and then just hand it over. You know what I mean?
I don't know, but I mean, it seems like it's worked out for Marmite, so that's nice.
Definitely worked out for Marmite. That's a pretty good deal. So basically, there was a brief period where I was busy FCing against Red vs. Blue and I let the war deck slip. So we had to wait 24 hours to get it started again. It's a bit of an annoyance, but we really only missed one Poco timer because of it. We had reinforced four, but three of the timers were coming out either before the war dropped or after it dropped. So we really only missed out on the one, and we went back to go kill it later. So no problems on that one. But Goblin mailed me back after I told him this, and... He writes back to me, Wardrop is most unfortunate. It's combined with a problem among the Lemmings. Decked RVB, which lapsed. But RVB did not join the Goon War as allies, since Lemming fleets practically stopped. There was some drama, blah blah blah. Noir took 2 times more Pokos in a week than Lemmings took in a month. The words mandatory CTA were uttered, laughed off, and FCs left. So essentially, Lemmings dropped the wars against RVB and more or less gave up. Follow up. Whoa, Lemmings got their shit together very fast now that they've got a competition. You, meaning Noir, had a serious talk with the CEO and reached the following. Lemmings will fly with their own fleets, not with us. Lemmings will turn into Marmite Light, is the phrase that he used. War decking more targets. I am just one client. I'll pay for war decks if I like the result, and stop paying if I don't. I stop backseat alliance leading. Sends on his regrets that we won't be working together and stuff, but basically, the outcome of this was that the Darwin's Lemmings are essentially going to be micromanaged by Marmite Collective now, and I assume, like you said, Marmite Light will follow more or less what they're doing. I'm going to guess they'll either fold into Marmites or take decks just like Marmites in terms of accepting decks from people to deck that target and not really leaving the G to undock. I don't know if they'll get listed under the Merc Market. Maybe they will, but I don't really see an economic reason for Marmites and Lemmings to pay double for their wars, basically. Because, I mean, if you think about it, if they're both going to deck the same people, more or less, or if they're going to fly the same fleets, it would behoove them to deck the same people. And really, it just doubles their war costs if they're two separate alliances. So I would suspect in the future we'll either see some kind of formal transition for Lemmings into some kind of training organization for Marmite Collective, or, more likely, Marmites will absorb Darwin's Lemmings and just become an even larger Hubcamp alliance. Which they are doing quite well. I disparage their ability to fleet up because they sort of left us hanging and were just generally disappointments in that regard. But they are killing things, and as much as Goonswarm laughs off losses in HiSec, they are piling up, so they are effectively shutting down trade hubs. Gotta give them that. Aliaras, CSM Corner, go!
Alright, so, latest thing that has been announced CSM-wise, the refining dev blog came out. CCP is changing the way that we do reprocessing. Most notably, they are removing 100% refines. They're buffing mining yield, or not mining yield, they're buffing reprocessing yields to compensate. So, someone who used to have a 100% refine can still get it back, or can still get back the same number of minerals. It's just that you would no longer be refining at 100% efficiency, you're refining at like 77% efficiency. So that's good. It's good for a couple of reasons. One, NullSec stations are going to be better at refining than HiSec stations. There's this sort of weird situation where it was pretty much always an easier and better option to refine your ore in HiSec than it was to refine it in NullSec, which is one of the things that made NullSec industry, or makes NullSec industry, more challenging. That's no longer the case. NullSec outposts are better than HiSec outposts. Unfortunately, NPC NullSec stations are only as good as HiSec stations, which is something that I hope gets fixed.
Should probably be as good as low-sec stations, really.
Yeah, low-sec stations are as good as high-sec stations, or as bad as high-sec stations. There should be some scaling for the NPC stations as well. POS refineries don't suck anymore. In fact, POS refineries are quite good. So that's exciting. One of the other big changes was a heavy nerf to scrap metal refining. So basically mineral compression by building a whole bunch of 425mm railguns and then refining them in your destination area is dead. The alternative is an explicit ore compression. So you can... It's no longer just a thing that Auroracle does. There's now a little POS array that you can use to compress ore. And the compressed ore itself is being buffed. So it's not a blueprint thing anymore either. You take some ore to this compression array at a POS, push a button, and it gets turned into compressed ore that you can then take to somewhere else. So if you are a miner in HiSec, the best, one of the better value for your time is probably going to be to sell compressed ore to NullSec producers. People who are building capitals and super capitals will be buying the compressed ore to import.
You can also sell uncompressed ore to ore compressors.
Yeah, you can sell uncompressed.
You can be the compressed ore person, or
yep.
You can refine the minerals like you did before and sell to that market.
Yep, exactly. The refining interface sucks less now, which is frankly outstanding. It has some estimated value stuff, so it'll be easier to understand without building a spreadsheet necessarily what's going on and how you're making money off of it. It's now about, I think Minus said on the forums, about like 15 or 30 million cheaper to build a battleship in NullSec than it is to build it in HiSec. So there's, a small but noticeable advantage. And that, comes from either mining minerals locally and refining them much better in the much better refinery in NullSec, or refining the compressed ore, which will still give you the benefit. So you can import that and refine it and make a bit more money. It doesn't actually do that much for NullSec mining income, which is still kept down mostly by the rarity of Arknor, Bistote, and Crocite ores. The NullSec ores are pretty good value per time, but there aren't that many of them, so on average a grab site's still going to be pretty low return unless you're, heavily multi-boxed with the Auroracle out and all that business. So in that sense, it's a wash, but overall it's a good thing. One of the things that this enables CCP to do is that if you look at the Tyrosite blueprints, they have these extra materials on them. So that's, that was added because they couldn't just change the ship and just change the mineral requirements. Because if they increased the mineral requirements, then what would happen would be that people would reprocess the ship, and they would suddenly get a whole bunch more minerals back. So you could create minerals from thin air. If 100% refining is no longer like a thing, then that's not a worry anymore. Which is great for balance and like the balance of being able to adjust the costs of things by adjusting like the inputs. They don't have to worry about like, all right, so what happens when people reprocess this and get these additional valuable inputs back without having to put them in beforehand, because now that just, you don't really get them back. You lose money on it because a lot of that is lost to waste. The other negative side effect is that for people who loot missions, this is a nerf. And some of those people are going to be new players and stuff. And that's...
It's a fairly, like... I don't know if CCP really realizes, like, just how few of type and number there are when it comes to meta modules that are actually mm-hmm. worth putting up on the market versus reprocessing for what ends up becoming, like, a fairly sizable quantity of, if you're salvaging and looting...
what becomes a fairly sizable quantity of that amount of money. Like,
right.
The salvage itself sucks in high sec. Salvage itself isn't really that good in low sec. It's like...
It's not that good in 0-0 either.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's actually, I don't know, when I was doing it a lot, and when I was doing, like, ninja salvaging stuff, I was making quite a bit of money. You know, sure, I would have made more if I was looting, but I didn't want to go suspect.
But you're also, if you're ninja salvaging, you're basically salvaging missions nonstop.
Yeah.
You're not running a mission and then pausing to salvage.
Yeah, which has never been the optimal way to run a mission. The optimal way is to blitz. But it is a nerf as long as the meta modules remain as they are. And I know I think I remember reading Rise talking about wanting to change that eventually, but I forget.
Yeah, that's been in the public sphere for a while, that they sort of want to not necessarily flat buff them, but take another pass at the meta modules, how they relate to T2 and how they relate to one another.
Yeah. But it that part sucks, but the rest of it is so awesome that I think it's still a good change that's worth doing.
Oh yeah, it's definitely a net positive. I spent nearly a year in CSM 7 pushing so hard to get this kind of a change, especially the second half of it when we were doing work on Odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so relieved that it's finally in. It was very, 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 very nearly in the Odyssey expansion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was... They gave us slides that would explain all the different features, and we went through this process a little bit on some earlier casts. You can listen back. I won't really get too into it, but basically we had a menu of sorts of possible features for that expansion to help, you know, construct what the ideal CSM Odyssey expansion would be, and each of the CSMs was required to submit their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this was one of those options, and it was definitely the option that made it into mine and quite a few others. But, you know, there were other priorities, and it just didn't get in, and I was so relieved when that dev blog got put out. Ironically, the day after we did the issues panel for industry. I was so relieved that it didn't, like, just get lost in the cutting room floor or, you know, put on the back burner never to be heard from again. This is a change that I needed to happen for a long time. And it's about half of the high-sec infrastructure rebalance that needs to happen. The other half is the pricing of the production and science slots. It needs to be a bit more dynamic, I think. More like offices responding to demand in the particular station and that kind of thing. But, yeah. And same thing with taxes. So I would say it's one third. It's about one third. But it's a big third, and it's a big hurdle, and it's going to open up a lot of expansion opportunities, and like you said, balancing options for CCP in terms of adjusting meta modules, in terms of adjusting ships, adjusting nullsec stations, adjusting passes. It gives them the room to work,
mm-hmm.
basically, which they didn't have because highsec was perfect, literally perfect. And you can't improve on perfection. Nullsec's not perfect. Lowsec's certainly not perfect. Wormholes aren't perfect. All those places have trade-offs. Highsec was always the place where there wasn't a trade-off. And if you are concerned about the balance or viability of certain activities in other places, you know, you can't not look at this side of the equation. So I'm pumped. It's going to be good. I don't control a nullsec refinery anymore, but I like what it will do to the game. And I like that it opens up a new option for people in terms of this ore compression market. That's another industrial opportunity for people to get in there and trade and have a gigantic, like, ore reprocessing farms all over the place and then get that shipped out. But that could be undercut by people that are selling the minerals direct, and it's just cool. I think the only bad thing about it is that the way they're implementing the ore compression does kind of put the work wall in a bad spot. But CCP is aware of that issue, and they said they're going to look at it, so.
Yep.
I'd say unqualified win, and it feels good to get that ball over the end zone.
Pretty much.
Oh, and also the death of mineral compression in terms of putting it in items, jumping in and reprocessing it. I was so vehemently opposed to that. But people were like, no, we needed to make Canalsec Industry work. Do you, though?
Well, yeah, and now it's been replaced by this ore compression thing, but the way that the ore compression is implemented, it's a lot more saner and sort of... It's a lot saner and conceptually saner. Like, oh, well, okay, you compress the ore into cubes, and then you move it out into Nullsec, and then you refine it to uncompress it. That makes perfect sense. And you do it at a POS array, so, you know, players can... You know, sell the ore in this way, or make the ore this way, or
whatever. You're not distorting the value of one set of items over another, because
exactly.
A certain fat number of items are like physical unicorns, where somehow you can get more out of what you put into it.
Mm-hmm.
Which doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, it's also, you know, I guess the one pain in the neck is for people who are Nullsec people who are doing their own compressing and importing. You can't make a courier contract to a POS, so it's harder to outsource some of the work that you have to do.
But that's a something that could be iterated on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much.
I think, generally speaking, it's a much healthier model. Makes more sense conceptually to new players and to just people that understand how physics works.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, everything about it is cooler. It opens up some room for exciting development in other areas of space, and I am all for it. Allie Ross, how is your campaign going?
Well, someone made me a really cool t-shirt.
Hey.
There's a cool shirt on Lula Fine. I'm gonna get one and wear it to FanFest so that it'll be easy to tell who's me. It's, you know, the nerdy looking redhead with her own face on her shirt. But that, you know, that's gonna be it looks awesome. It's a cool, you know, kind of campaign poster thing. But, you know, obviously that, you know, just looks awesome, doesn't necessarily get you votes. Been talking to people, you know, the reason I was hanging out on NoHo Comms was because I've been, you know, I was talking to them and trying to convince them to get me to vote them somewhere on the ballot. I need to actually turn in my passport photo. You'd think that CCP could just, like, take it, but I guess there's also the little statement thing that one has to write. My thread's been pretty quiet lately. I haven't, you know, had any questions there to answer. It's been kind of a quiet week for the campaign, but the week before that was a little bit more active. I've been on, I think, all of the podcasts that are doing interviews so far.
Do you have any upcoming events you'd like to plug? AMAs, Hangouts?
Hangouts in Space is happening this Saturday. We do space hangouts the same weekend that I record Declarations of War. So that'll be at 2000 on Saturday. I will have a post up and tweet it out and all that. Gonna do a special space hangout right before the election starts. So keep your eyes peeled for that. Election's coming up remarkably soon. Which reminds me that I need to sit down with Dolan about minutes some more, because that needs to happen before the minutes need to be out before the election starts.
Certainly. Speaking of the elections, we're going to have a few candidate issue panels coming ahead. The industry panel was well received. A lot of people listened to it. We've had a lot of comments on it, people giving feedback and discussing the issues. It's really interesting, especially in light of the CCP post about what they're doing to change industry, or one of the things they're doing to change industry in the upcoming patch. I mean, you can basically listen to see if these candidates got it right, and if you're seeing issues there that CCP is not addressing, there's a pretty good discussion of all the pre-patch industry issues. It's not a perfect discussion. We didn't have, like, every angle considered, you know, some of the questions, according to industrialists, which have commented onto the cast, some of the questions were a bit newbie and, quote, clearly asked by a non-industrialist, which, I don't know, I can't say that I'm not proud of that, but it's definitely a good listen. We're going to have more. We're going to have a Wardex panel. We're going to have a NullSec/power projection/PvP balance panel. That we're going to tie that all together because we have some candidates that are very knowledgeable in all those areas. And because, quite frankly, some of them are fairly tightly intertwined. And we're going to get into how those things are related. And, of course, the one issue panel that Allie will be on to focus on Eve development in both the game and the community. And the list of candidates for each of those is quite exceptional. We're going to have guys like Mangala Solaris, Jane Fillon, Ali Aras, Manfred Sidious, Gorski Carr, Xander Fina, Cyan Oviander, also an OR pilot, who we are strongly supporting for this election. I mean, you name it, they're going to be there, unless they're not exceptional at all, in which case I probably didn't invite them. But it's definitely going to be a great listen. So if you see those popping up in your feed, you know, don't be alarmed. It's not the usual show format, but it is definitely worth your time. Final shout out to our sponsor, EveBet, www.eve-bet.com. It's New Eden's premier betting service. You can bet on real life sports, esports, and Eve sports with ISK. They've handled over 50 trillion with a T, bets since opening. So they are a service you can definitely trust. In addition to normal betting, they also have blackjacks, slot machines, and most of their odds are industry standard, or at least very fair for odds where they don't exist in certain EVE cases. But I myself have used the site, and it is quite fun. I would definitely recommend it to anybody that's into that sort of stuff. That's it for episode 71. Go to declarationsofwar.com to participate in the show poll, leave a comment, or put a donation. Grab yourself some sweet Declarations of War merch at welovefine.com/eve, or you can get there by clicking our store link. I have to plug, we've got some awesome new shirt and poster designs. Allie referenced it earlier. You can get yourself an Alec shirt, a Turtle shirt, or an Allie shirt, so you can support your favorite host. And the posters are extremely high quality and frankly quite awesome. You can reach Noir via our public channel, CafeNoir. Apply to join us or Noir Academy on the forums, www.noirmerks.com. Good hunting, listeners.